When I was a teenager, my parents took my sister and I on a bus trip to Massachusetts, to Plymouth Harbor and Boston. And there was a day where part of the tour was to go out into Plymouth Harbor and do some whale watching. And then they took you in off of the docks and brought you up to this beautiful room that overlooked the harbor. And there was a gigantic buffet there that was filled, this gigantic table that was filled with all sorts of seafood that they had freshly caught. And everybody on the bus waited in line for the buffet to go through, the buffet line to go through. And when they got to the end of the line, the last person who happened to be in the line was me that day. I was the very last person on this bus trip who got to go through the line. And the gentleman looked around and he said, "You're the last." And I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "I remember reading somewhere about the last being first and the first being last." And he took out these gigantic lobsters and crab, these are small ones, but he took gigantic, I mean as big as my head, lobster and crab, and he piled them on my plate. I got more stuff, more food than any person that had gone through the line that day. And he kept piling things on. He says, "I've heard of the last being first. I remember reading about that somewhere. A wise man once said that." And of course, he was referring to this parable in the Gospel of Matthew about Jesus talking about the last being first, and that in God's economy, in God's way of thinking, the people who are last are not going to get small little toy crabs to eat, but their plates are going to be overflowing with lobster and crab and potatoes. They're going to be overflowing with vegetables and food in abundance. But this laborers in the vineyard story from Matthew 20 is ultimately, I think, a very unfair story. I think it's kind of ironic that in the parable the landowner says, "I'm not being unfair, am I?" Well, yes, absolutely. It's the definition of unfair what he does. He hires some people early in the day to work all day for a denarius, which is a day's wage back then. So you would expect if you worked all day, you would get one denarius. But then as people come throughout the day and wait at the gate to be hired, which was where you would go, that's where you would go to get a job. You would go out to the gate and you would wait there until somebody came along and needed you for a job. As people came, they were also hired, even to the point where at the end of the day, where there was just an hour's left of daylight, they also were hired. And when it comes time to be paid at the end of the workday, the people who've been hired first see that the people who have been hired last get a full day's wage. So they think, "This is great. This is going to be a fantastic opportunity for me. If they got the denarius, we're going to be given, I don't know, 7, 8 times as much. This is going to be a huge payday." And that is not at all what happens. Everybody gets the same. Now, this is totally an unfair story by any way of thinking about it. Whether it's the world situation or the economic situation or the political order, we all know about the power of the carrot and the stick. The idea that you hold out in front of somebody this one denarius and you say, "If you do better than this, you'll get even more. You need to work hard for what you get in this world." Yet the point of Jesus' parable is deeply unfair because Jesus tells us that the Father whom we worship this morning is unfair and deeply so. You wouldn't teach your children this story. This would be a terrible story for motivation for kids. It supports arriving late for a job and sleeping in if you have nothing better to do all day. You wouldn't give this to your kids and say, "Go at it. Live your life by Matthew 20. It'll work out just fine for you." That would be a terrible way to do things. You wouldn't put this story in your year-end financial reports for your stockholders. "Oh, don't worry. The people that we hired at the beginning of the year, they made exactly the same as the people that we hired on December 31st. Don't worry, we got it all in control around here. Everything will work out just fine. We're keeping very good track of the books. Yet the point of the story is that God's grace is greater and stronger and more powerful than any human achievement. That God's goodness is even to the lost and the lonely. And the question, the very uncomfortable question that this parable puts before our faces is, who doesn't register on your radar? What type of person is your last? Because that's the person who's going to be first in God's kingdom. What kind of person do you never, ever spend any time thinking about? Is it the orphaned child in Nicaragua? That's in another country, that's someplace else, we don't have to worry about that. Is that the woman wrongly imprisoned in our prison system? Or the poor teenager who has interviewed for a million jobs, but because he looks wrong, he doesn't look like he can hold a job in Homewood or Wilkinsburg, never gets a call back? Or is the last perhaps the unemployed man who goes to bed hungry tonight? Who is it who doesn't register on your radar? It's easy for us to say we've got compassion for those nearby. It's easy for us to say charity begins at home. But Jesus says nothing of the sort. Jesus dreams of a world where the needs of the lost and the lonely are satisfied and their plates are piled high with crab and with lobster, are piled high with food in abundance, and no more do they have to go to bed with their children weeping because of hunger. No more will people be drowning in plastic credit card debt. Jesus dreams of a world where people will be blessed, not by their social status, not by their class, not by their pedigree or birth certificate, but they are blessed because God has chosen to bless them. Jesus dreams of a world where the lost are fed, where the lonely have companionship. Where the first, those who have the most toys, those who continue to consume, those who have the biggest bottom line, are not any longer the first. This is an uncomfortable parable, my friends. It really brings the question to us. Who doesn't register on your radar? Who do you forget about? Not maliciously, not horribly, not somebody that you treat bad. This isn't about forgiveness. This parable is not at all about turning an enemy into a friend. It's about people you haven't even thought about before. The people who show up last to be hired. Back in May, when I was in the Philippines, I made a really bad decision, which turned out not to be a really bad decision, thank goodness. But the Philippines they're 12 hours ahead of us. So basically what that means is that right now it's 10:30 at night-ish. So jet lag really messed me up that first day. So at 6 o'clock in the morning, I am wide awake. And this is the first morning in the Philippines. Well, I didn't have breakfast being served in the hotel until about 9. So I got 3 hours to burn. So I thought it would be a really good idea in a neighborhood I've never seen by daylight. We came in very late at night. I thought it would be a good idea to walk around the block, which was kind of stupid, actually, when I think about it, in a place I've never been before, walking around the block and not entirely sure where I am. But it turned out okay. It was fine. But the first thing, the neighborhood in which the hotel was located really brought some things home to me that I never knew. While we were there, there was a newspaper story that broke about homelessness in Manila, and that homelessness is a huge problem in Manila, and I saw it with my own eyes that very morning. And these folks were invisible to me up until that point. I've never really given much thought to what homelessness means in another country, in a foreign country. But one of the ways in which people make their living in the Philippines is they drive these little diesel-powered tricycles. They'll be like a taxi cab. And they've got a sidecar on it. And they'll charge you 11 cents, 11 of their cents, to drive you wherever you want to go. Many of these people also have side businesses where they sell shoes or sell things on the street, food or whatever. But they live out of their tricycles. Their whole family lives out of their tricycles. So what that means is that as I was walking around, people were getting ready for the day, and I had seen people who had spent the whole night sleeping in the sidecar of their tricycle. And they were getting ready to go on and do whatever it was they did for money that day. Whether it was to taxi someone around, or if they were going to be selling shoes or cell phones or whatever it was that they were going to be doing. And many of them had family as well. They had put up a little sort of area on the sidewalk where their children were laying out on towels, if they were lucky, or just on the bare concrete sleeping. Now, that in and of itself took me back a little bit and surprised me. But then this week, I saw that a tropical storm went through the Philippines, and I saw many of the pictures of the terrible flooding that happened in Manila. And I started to think about what in the world happened to the folks who were living on the streets. I mean, you or I, we've got insurance. You or I, we could go and seek higher ground. But as I thought about it, I probably saw 400, 500 people in my little walk that morning on the streets, sleeping on the streets. What happened to them when the street was 4 feet high in water? What happened to them this week? And I don't know. What happened when that's the place where you sleep, when that's the place where everything you owned would have been washed away? And seeing those pictures made my problems in life seem awful tiny, awful small. Made any complaints I had this week very, very minuscule and minor. And Jesus says that those people, the people who are homeless on the streets of Manila, are going to be first in the kingdom of heaven. Jesus says that the 12 disciples who gave up their livelihood, who gave up their fishing, think of how much money they had sunk into fishing boats and nets and hooks, and think of how much this was what their families depended on for a paycheck. When they gave that up to follow an itinerant rabbi, a homeless rabbi named Jesus, through the promised land, what was their reward? What was the reward of the 12 who gave everything up to follow Jesus? This is a tough parable, friends, and we can't just listen to it. This is a parable where we can't just say, oh, that's nice, dear. That's a really nice story. This story challenges us to encounter the risen Jesus Christ. This story, this parable, challenges us because in it we meet Jesus, and he asks us, what are you doing? What are you doing for those who show up all day ready to work? What are you doing to introduce them to me, the risen Jesus? And just when we think we know that answer, well, that's an easy one. The people who've worked all day, we've got to reward them with something. That's no problem, we reward them with the day's wage. Jesus then asks us this question. What are you going to do with the last in my Father's kingdom? What are you going to do with the person who is unprepared? What are you going to do with the person who shows up at the 12th hour, the last minute? What are you going to do with the person who is invisible? And when we read the parable that way, and we are face to face with the risen Christ, and he asks us, what are you going to do for the last and the least, the lost and the lonely? Well, I don't know what we do, but I hope whatever it is that we indeed do for the last, whatever it is that we do to minister for those who are last, I hope that we've done enough. Amen.